Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys tell you about where they've been and what's been going on, and talk all about the real estate market. Is it a buyer's market or a seller's market? All while sipping and reviewing Old Elk Infinity Blend straight bourbon whiskey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective, Lifestyle International Realty, and Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and as always, I'm here with...
Jameson Amoros.
Oscar Ibarra.
And hi, guys. We're back. I know it's been a while.
Presto change-o.
Ta-da!
Different.
Same, but different. But still same.
Honestly, guys, we're on this episode, as you guys know, I know we've been away for a while. On this podcast, we talk all things real estate, home ownership, as well as drink and review bourbons and whiskeys from across the nation. On this episode, what we want to do is we kind of want to tell you guys where we've been, what's been going on at first, what happened, and then we're going to move on to a little bit more about the market. What the hell is going on? How is the new job report going to be affected? What is the market looking like? Is it a seller's? Is it a buyer's market? We're going to go over all that for you guys today. But first off, on today's episode, the bourbon that we have is fantastic. Jameson, you want to tell them about it?
Yeah, I mean, so I figured since we've been away for a while, we had the opportunity, independent of where we were, Old Elk reached out to us at one point.
That was at the first place.
Yes, and said, hey, we want you guys to bring our bourbon on, and we tasted through some of their four of theirs, okay? And we loved all of them. Rated them very highly. They are a distillery based out of Fort Collins, so local, and they are fantastic. Well, every year they come out with what's called an Infinity Blend. And the Infinity Blend is a yearly release, and it essentially is a single barrel batch that is a combination, and Charlie, if I can borrow the bottle from you real quick, a combination of the bottles that we've already tried, right? And they're all different. So
it's all the four bottles in one?
So check this out.
Wow. I'm going in this blind, by the way.
I guess I can put it back.
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah. So this Infinity Blend is 2023, and it is made up of, and I'll give you guys the percentages, 15% of Old Elk 2022 Infinity Blend of straight whiskeys, 40% Old Elk High Malt Bourbon, which was aged 8 years, 43% Old Elk Straight Wheat Whiskey, aged 7 years, and then 1.5% Old Elk Straight Wheat Whiskey, aged 10 years.
Okay, so this is going to be sweet.
It's going to be smooth.
It should be. Yeah. It should be.
Because they're wheated. It should be sweet.
And it's too high wheated. And then malt.
Yes, it is. It's 111 proof, so it's a hot one.
I love it.
55.575% alcohol by volume, which I think is kind of funny. I think this is the first bourbon whiskey we've seen that goes down to the 100th percent deal. But I can just smelling it,
the color is
malty.
Incredible.
Yes,
the color is a lot darker than I would think because of the high malt.
Yeah,
and the
double wheat.
And it is.
Wheat. Yes.
Yeah. So basically, it's a blend of the hand selected barrels of high malt straight bourbon and Old Elk straight wheat whiskey. So it should be very sweet. But I wanted to bring this as kind of our reintroduction because it was one of our favorites when we were doing this in our original secret location that could not be named. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't had it in a while, and I saw it on the shelf. And I was
at this point, it's not the secret location that we would not name. It's just that location we don't want to name.
Well, now it's just, I think it's an empty warehouse.
I think it's just a mattress. It's a garage.
You know, so yeah, I thought it'd be a good reintroduction to the podcast.
I love it.
The other thing is there's a lot of things that go into this bourbon. There's a lot of things that are happening in the housing market. So I figured it was a good conglomeration of shit.
Coagulation
of shit that would go along with it. So,
Well, and I mean, I think it's great. We're going back to our roots, like you said, Old Elk, Fort Collins based. One of the first that actually reached out to us to review it specifically.
Yeah.
Like I said, the color on it.
Amber as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, the color's really dark. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, the nose isn't... I guess it would be as sweet as I thought it would be, but the burn's not there.
No, it's not.
And I'm going to be straight up with every listener, every viewer right now. I have not drank maybe but like two sips or maybe one drink since we stopped this podcast. So this one may be fun for me.
Yeah.
At 111%.
I'm about a week and a half since
you can tell though this thing as far as the
the weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just sticks to the side of the glass.
I mean, I'm getting vanilla.
Yeah.
Caramel in the nose.
I mean, it's an amber color, but it's so clear. So yeah. I don't know.
You can get the burn if you go in super deep. It's
a weird viscosity. I mean, in the glass, it looks a lot thicker, but you swirl.
Yeah, a lot of like candied
and
apple.
And it just comes down. And
mm-hmm. A lot of candied apple, nutmeg.
Yeah, I'm getting that spice.
I'm getting the nutmeg with a little bit of like apricot, cucumberish notes. I don't know.
Not as floral. Non-sweet.
Yep. The non-sweet, more floral.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to do an air cheers because we're a lot further away from everybody.
I don't have go-go gadget arms.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers
to the first sit back, boys.
Cheers.
Salud.
Hot damn.
Oh, wow. That didn't taste
Talk about
like,
Jiminy Crickets. Talk
I,
about
It
smooth.
Did not taste the way that I thought it was going to taste.
No, it was
at all.
So spice forward.
It is. And I thought there would be more rye or something around those lines if
it
tastes like
melts.
This.
And I was going to say, and you could...
It melts.
Yes. It's so light on your tongue.
It melts.
That's... Oh, man.
So the spice stays on the tongue in the front.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you... Which I think is actually kind of cool. So I still got... I had that spice, that pepper on the front.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I go to swallow, the back palate, the back side of the palate is all just... Dark chocolate,
mm-hmm.
vanilla, caramel.
God, that's insane. It, Infinity Blend is a beautiful name.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't stop.
No.
Like, I am getting sweetness with the spice at the front end. But then as it goes, the burn fades away.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes into that caramel. Yeah. Then it goes into a little bit of, like, apple-y, almost like a caramel apple.
It's
then it
like
ends
a
with the vanilla. Yeah.
Bourbon, but it...
Which would make sense with the wheat.
Proof.
Which would make sense with
but
the
there's
wheat.
Like a bitter tart to it.
Mm-hmm. There is, yes.
It's kind of like a peppery.
Yeah.
But it's that chocolate. It's that's what I'm saying. It's a dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
It's not milk
tart
chocolate.
It.
It's a dark chocolate.
High malt. That's so crazy.
Mm.
With both the wheats, don't get me wrong, it's sweet.
But for that proof, I mean, this is. I would 100%.
It's not in your face.
Exactly.
For the 111 proof, it's not in your face.
No, because it doesn't totally dry out your tongue.
No.
Mm-mm.
But it dries it out enough to where it brings forward that
I would
that
love
sweetness.
To see if they added their rye to this.
Mm-hmm. If what you're a beginner bourbon drinker, it's going to be a little hot.
Yeah.
If you're a seasoned bourbon drinker, it's really smooth.
Mm-hmm.
For what it
is. Yeah, this 100%.
Is going to be dangerous.
This is a campfire bourbon.
It's going to be, 100%.
Yeah. Mm. For the listeners or viewers out. Have seen this in the past.
Good.
If
that's
you know Jameson says it's a campfire bourbon, that means you could toss this down in one night with a couple of friends.
Oh, easy. Mm-hmm. Easy.
It'll go
down. I didn't have a shoot after this, we could probably get a bottle of the first one back.
Good segue into the market. The market will make you drink sometimes.
Yeah. Well, let's
But it's not all bad things. It's just
a
lot.
But we want to be fully transparent with you guys. We want to let you guys know what happened. First off, Chris at the Rouge, thank you for everything that you did for us. Thank you for all the bourbon recommendations, the whiskey recommendations, and getting us in contact with so many people. We are extremely grateful for all the opportunities that you gave us there. But what we want to do is kind of just tell you guys what happened. Like, if you saw Jameson's pre-show post, we got kicked out. Flat out.
We got asked to leave.
We got asked to leave. Basically, what ended up happening is we showed up to film an episode.
We got told to leave. We didn't get asked to leave.
No, we got told to leave.
Yeah, I showed up and Charlie was like, this is our last episode here.
And,
I was like, why? I don't know.
Basically, what ended up happening was I went in and started setting up, and one of the members came out and told me, hey, this is going to be our last episode together. I tried to fight for you, but the owners want to move away from it. These guys, they want to stay kind of even keeled on it, but I'm gonna give you guys just straight up, we got let go or removed from that space for our quote unquote political beliefs. We were too left leaning in our
which
in our
is
posts.
Crazy.
Yeah, 100%. But again, what ended up happening was a member walked through, heard us talking about the economy and what's going on with the economy, what could happen based on some of the decisions made by the current administration, and they didn't like that. So they asked us to leave, and in full transparency, we're in our new brokerage space. So what you see here is Lifestyle International Realty. Jamison and I joined them a couple months back, and this is their new on-site location space, 9233 at Park Meadows. We also have a grand opening party happening next week starting at 3. We're going to do our ribbon cutting. There's going to be a lot of people in and out of the office, but going to be a great time. And then after that, at 6 p.m., we're going to go to Death & Co. for the after party. So what you guys are seeing here, obviously, you guys can see we're kind of jerry-rigged up right now. On tables, all that kind of stuff.
We'll get it dialed in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the first one back.
Yeah.
First one back. We'll get there. But that's a story. That's a background of what happened, guys. But we are so excited to be back. Honestly, all three of us have been like, when can we go? When can we go? We've been waiting for this space.
And I can't stress enough, Chris. He was awesome.
Mm-hmm. He was.
100%. There was some bourbon that we would have never even heard. I mean, we would have never reached out and purchased.
No.
And or even known about.
Yeah. I mean, the movie.
The Old Soul.
Yeah, Old Soul, the movie bourbon.
The movie bourbon, the Remus, or I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was all really cool stuff outside of the high-end stuff that he brought in. Chris, thanks a lot. I mean, that guy's awesome.
Yeah. And viewers, listeners, if you guys have anybody that's doing bourbon, even if it's a small distillery here in Colorado or they want to get reviews, send them our way.
Yep.
Let us know. Comment. Send us a DM. As always, we're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, as well as YouTube. So let us know. With that being said, the market, the turbulence.
Have you guys seen the little meme where it's the little, and I'm not saying this racist at all because it's just what she is.
Well, we can't get kicked
out
of here.
She's a little Asian girl on the little spinning teacup.
Oh, and she's going spin around.
And part of her, she's like this, and then she's like, and then she's like, that's what the market has been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, it's a roller coaster, right? We've been active in it pretty much all summer. And it's been up and down to the point of neighborhood specific, house specific.
Oh, I mean,
the idea was to reset and just kind of like take a breather and go, okay, what's really happening?
Especially because now as I get more experience in real estate and even learn more about lending and how everything is affected, I can't imagine what it's like not being in the real estate industry, not having the knowledge based on just the titles and the headlines that I see come through on a regular basis.
Well, here, let me give you an example and then we can start talking. Here's three headlines today. Okay.
Today. Okay.
Headline number one, seller beware. Homeowners are backing out of real estate deals more than ever. Headline number two, mortgage rates see biggest one-day drop in over a year. Headline number three, housing costs may reach normal affordability by 2030.
Mm.
What are you supposed to do with that information?
Also, again, when they headline, let's make real estate affordable. What does that mean?
Yeah. Right. What does that mean?
How can you drop a price or make something affordable that we all own? It's like an HOA.
Yeah.
People bitching about an HOA, but an HOA is a homeowners association.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the meetings, make changes yourself. It's not a conglomerate saying, no, you can't do this. Same with real estate. Folks, we own our houses.
Mm-hmm.
We dictate what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, anybody else but ourselves. We create what moves forward, but you know, the media spins it the way they want to spin it.
And I think that this is just as an overview from those headlines, I'm excited to see what happens. And Jamison, you've been saying this for the last 3 years, right? Is since COVID, we had how many realtors signed up? It was like 500,000.
1 million.
Something like that.
Like nationwide? Or what do you mean?
Yeah. The statistic where between when COVID happened to how many new agents there
were.
Oh,
God. Yeah. I mean, we were, I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago nationwide, we had almost 2 million licensed realtors.
Mm-hmm.
We're now down to 1.1.
And I think it's going to continue.
And I think
we're
projected to be less than 900,000 by the end of this year.
And I'm okay with that. Not only for the market, but for the clients. Because I think what's going to happen now is not only buyer's agents are going to have to prove their worth for their commission, seller agents are going to have to show what I'm doing to market your home. How are we going to get this on the market? Here are my tactics. This is how we deal with things.
Mm-hmm.
And the more intelligent agent that you deal with, the more seasoned agent, the better your experience is going to be.
Well, Austin, let me ask you a question. So we've got two very interesting levels of experience in this room, right? I've been in the industry since basically like COVID forward, okay? So my lens on the market has been, my normal is very different than Oscar's normal. Oscar's been in the real estate industry for just real estate side, what, 17 years?
22.
Okay, 22 years, right? You're for all intent and purpose, of those 22 years, if you take outside COVID, what was a normal, like throughout the year, what was a normal real estate cycle?
Cycle or let me put it this way. In conversation, there was times in the market that you would go talk to the seller and say, hey, Mr. Seller, so this is my marketing plan. This is how we're going to get your house sold. Let's fill out the paperwork, and we should get your house sold in about 6 to 7 months.
Right.
If we're lucky. So there was a ton of inventory at one point. Some houses would sit for a year. Another aspect on that, or to talk about that talking point, is the fact that, you know, you had to get to work. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to get to work, and you got to find a way to sell this these homes. You know, going into what was COVID, you had access to the MetroList system. You were going to sell the house.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's just getting back to it's not even back to basics. It's back to work, because mm-hmm. what worked back then doesn't work right now. We're in a different market, different technology. It's a lot more fast paced. But we've seen, I mean, seasonality was a thing, but it's never been a, like a normal, and I'm doing quotes right now, normal market. What is it? We pivot all the time. Mm-hmm. It's right. forever changing, but it's going back to, let's get back to work.
Yeah. I think from what I've seen, the seasonality part has been, it's broken.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's broken for a couple of reasons. I think inventory broke it. I also think access to listings and the internet broke it.
Yep.
And I think COVID broke it because of what we've talked about now for 2.5-3 years, mm-hmm. migration patterns, right? Because you could say over the last 3 years, we have not seen a normal, historically normal spring selling season.
Season, yeah.
Right? We've seen random pops based on interest rates, based on economic data, based on the administration, based on all sorts of crazy shit.
And again, sorry, getting back into the rhythm of talking on the podcast, people that are watching us at 1.2 or 1.5 speed, I'm going to sound normal. Other people, bear with me. I'm getting my bearings back. But so to talk about that, seasonality is broken. So right now, what are the two biggest factors? Three factors, right? Fall is yep. right around the corner. Mm-hmm. Kids are going back to school.
Yep.
That's a talking point. It might kind of dip a little bit. And then you have holidays coming through.
Mm-hmm.
But then what's on the flip side of that? What's happening the 16th of this month?
Right. Rate cuts.
Feds are meeting.
Yep.
So, again, broken. So you take that seasonality stuff. Bam. Let's take that out.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we forgot to pay the utility bill good. Here. So what happened? Our lights just got shut down.
We're good.
So if we're talking about seasonality, yes, there's a lot of factors that go in, but then there's so much going on in the market that it's out the window. Like you said, it's broken.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think that's the takeaway I've seen market wise. And when you say, well, what's happening in the market? I think what's happening in the market currently, buyers and sellers.
Well, that's the question you have to ask yourself before you make an informed decision. What's happening in the market?
It's incredibly sensitive.
It's turbulent.
It's sensitive, right? Mm-hmm. And it is hinging on every headline, on every economic report that comes out, on every rate drop, on every rate increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would assume, and this is, we're filming this day. Today's what? September 5th, right?
5th.
So rates dropped today because job report came out and it was extremely underwhelming. My guess is once we wind the clock back, if we go next week, we're going to see that the mortgage application.
Hold on. Not only was the unemployment report terrible, do you know what the number? Do you know what the number was for added jobs?
22,000.
22,000 nationwide added jobs. That is nuts.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's sensitive because if you look at that data overall,
mm-hmm.
in your head, and I just had this conversation with a client before we were filming this, because they're waiting for rates to drop. And normally, when you see that big of a one-day drop, you automatically think it's going to go gangbusters, right? Mm-hmm. However, the drop is being caused by bad job reporting. So the people that would normally say, okay, rates are dropping, could mm-hmm. also be the people that don't have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So economically, it's not like we're putting people in a better spot from an affordability standpoint and wage growth. It's mm-hmm. just rates are cheaper.
Yep.
So is it going to go gangbusters? We don't really know.
No,
there's two very opposing forces, which is why I'm saying like right now, it's very convoluted what's happening. Well,
and a lot of the talks are saying that it'll drop. The feds are reporting that it'll drop anywhere from a quarter to half and then more towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
No.
I mean, that's just it. We don't know. And then there's big lenders that are taking it into their own hands and dropping the rates themselves. So Jameson and I were having this conversation. Two of the biggest wholesale lenders are already doing their own drops without the feds because they know something, right?
Yep.
Big conglomerates like them, they're not going to do it just because they're nice.
Oh,
they know
also,
something's coming up.
Sorry, I didn't mention this, guys. While we were gone, Oscar added another value step for his clients and for you guys watching. What'd you do, Oscar?
I am a licensed loan officer with eMortgage Capital as well.
So we it's not only now we have mortgages and loan information right here on the show for you guys again. No, we'll still bring in, obviously, we'll still bring in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a realtor at heart. I'll always be a realtor. I added this for information and to help the consumer a little bit more when my, you know, I still have lender partners.
Yeah.
That they're my go-to. They're going to be my lenders. They have great rates. I respect them. I love the business that we built together. But for the stuff that they can't do, because I am a broker, I have over 250 banks that I could broker out to make sure you get the best deal. Or if you have a non-traditional mortgage you're trying to get, I can access that for you. And I could access information too.
Exactly. And that's, I'm most excited because now we can give both sides just right here every episode if we need to.
And it's not that there's a lot of insider information, but there is. There's a lot of these big lenders that are, you know, offering things to the public that just gets a little, I don't know, the noise kind of dampers them.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, some of these big lenders out there have, I don't want to say artificially, but they've dropped the rates before the feds did, just so they could get ahead of the curve. And then now, while everybody is like, okay, now we do it, because that was my conversation at home and with other realtors that I had. I said, why does a consumer wait till the meteorologists say that it's okay to refinance or buy?
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening. The media says, okay, consumer, now do it, when you were able to do it before. You just have to have information and talk to the right individual, the right real estate agent, the right mortgage lender. Well, and not all of them are going to be honest.
Yep.
You know, a lot of them are hurting out there, and they do need to make that dollar. But the ones that are actually doing it because it's their job and the fiduciary is a responsibility they take serious, they can help you out. So it's case by case. Yes, listen to media. Yes, get informed. But if you're trying to make a decision to either buy, refinance, or sell your home, definitely talk to an expert. Let them give you the options. You make the informed decision from the source, not from the noise.
I love it. I love it. And I think let's go ahead and start kind of breaking down some of the news. We already talked about unemployment. And kind of, as you guys know, if you listen to the podcast, it's kind of an inverse. Normally, when unemployment is worse, interest rates are better because, again, they need to entice you to come take out a loan to buy a house.
Which is crazy because one of the statistics that came up was that refis were up 60% year over end for the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So that means last year during the first quarter, this year, same time, 60% higher. There was more refinancing done.
Yep.
So, again, it's case by case.
100%. And I think one thing that I want to address is let's talk about the shift that everybody's talking about. It is now shifted to a seller's market. What does that mean?
Buyer's market.
Oh, sorry, a buyer's market. What does that mean?
I mean, in layman's terms, it just means buyers currently hold negotiating power in the market when it comes to housing, because, I mean, if you want a numbers reason, the numbers reason is based on what a house is being listed for and what it's actually going to contract for, buyers and sellers are about $50,000 to $60,000 apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 500,000 more sellers nationwide than there are currently qualified buyers that are actively looking for homes. So it's a supply and demand equation. If you've got 500,000, half a million more sellers than you do buyers, then the buyers that are active are going to hold the negotiating power in that scenario.
Two things. One is when the rates drop, it's not going to be gangbusters and, oh my God, your house is going to go up in value and now it's going to be a seller's market again. No, I think one thing that may happen, that if you wait until that happens to either buy or sell, on the sell side, maybe it'll help you out. But on the buy side, one thing that will, I don't think we're going to go up in price point, but I think concessions are going to go away.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 that you could take advantage of right now if you act now. And, you know, the rates are already there. You know, they're not quote unquote announced. Now, let's talk about that on the other side of the coin. Everybody's talking about, well, let's make real estate affordable. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's not on the industry. That's on the consumer because they're talking about you dropping the price on your home. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. let's have that conversation with the consumer. How do you feel about that? That everybody's like, let's make real estate affordable. It's not like a button that we say, okay, now it's affordable.
Well, and I think that's honestly, it's funny because we were talking for the last 2 years about wait until interest rates drop, it's going to open up buyers. I don't think anybody expected sellers to go on market at the rate that they have, to where when the interest rates are down compared to where we were, like you said, the interest rates are down. We're at a 6.2 nationwide?
6.25.
6.25.
Six and a half.
Versus a 6.8 that we were at this time last year.
Almost seven.
Right? And normal, if you would have told us last year that this, what's going to happen? Oh, well, we're going to, buyers are going to, you know, come, sellers are going to have a free
yes and no. I mean, I think there's a psychological barrier at 6%, right? Number one. So I think that once it goes under six, I think you will start to see a ton of buyers come in.
Well,
here's the problem. And this is the unspoken thing that we've glazed on it a couple times. There are 40% of homeowners in the United States that own nothing on their houses.
Mm-hmm.
They are more than willing to sit on that house and wait you out because it is not costing them anything to do so.
And on top of that number, we still have all the people who bought at 2.8 right. and 3% that they're sitting and waiting.
That's what I'm saying. There's still that gap
mm-hmm.
where you've got, and you've seen it, Oscar. I've seen it. Like, there are scenarios where people are purchasing. And to go back to the, is this a buyer's market, seller's market? Obviously, it's a buyer's market currently. In the scenarios where sellers are willing to negotiate where they are, you can look at it. We broke it down by price point. You know, if you go in Colorado from $500,000 to $700,000, the average concessions right now on those properties anywhere between $15,000 and $22,000,
mm-hmm.
just across the board. And last month, I think it was 67% of properties gave some sort of concessions beforehand.
Let me put it like this. Okay. So I just had a closing this morning. I have another buyer under contract. Thank you. I have another buyer under contract in Aurora. And I had a third buyer who put an offer in on a home, and then stuff happened with the family. They pulled back. But the reason I bring this up is because between the two buyers, the one that closed today and the one that's under contract, I'm looking at $25,000 in concessions mm-hmm. between both of those. Then, just as an example, guys, do you guys know where LaSalle, Colorado is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I never heard of LaSalle, Colorado.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're talking to someone that sold 70%
of Hugo,
baby.
Yeah, you're right. I had never heard of it before. But we were looking, and I mean, I showed them probably 28 homes in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. Young couple, first time home buyers, young family. And we ended up finding a home in LaSalle, Colorado that was within their price range, did a $65,000 deduction, was on market for 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
Reached out to the listing agent, and basically what ended up happening was, hey, they went on market. They're paying two mortgages right now. They need to get rid of this property.
Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to give us max concessions, which was $18,000. Plus repairs outside of closing. That just goes to show you guys, like, it's there. For buyers, it in certain areas where it's sitting, and this is leading me into my next point, where in certain areas where it's sitting, buyers have opportunities. If your agent is aware of what's going on, knows what the market looks like in that area, calls the listing agent, there's huge opportunities for buyers in certain areas right now. And the reason I say certain areas is because while we're doing those showings, and I'm going to these 28 homes, we went to Brighton and LaSalle and then Thornton, okay? Mm-hmm. For those who don't know Colorado, that's about a 25-minute difference in drive between Thornton and Brighton, 20 without traffic, 18, whatever. But just in that difference, the amount of house that those clients were able to get mm-hmm. for the same price point in Brighton versus the price point closer to Denver and Thornton was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, we talk about hyper-local markets. One of the agents that was on the 5280 team, he reaches out to me from time to time to give him a hand, and he had a client that wanted to sell up in Greeley. Greeley is a college town.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Fort Collins. It's Greeley.
Yep.
So the current owner lives.
Does not smell as good as this bourbon. Just throwing it out.
Oh, it smells barnyardy.
We went to a
fun fact. Greeley has the West Coast or Western United States' largest
pig
slaughterhouse and what is it? Blood
processing
plant. Yeah.
It doesn't smell good.
So everybody
ever had
waits.
A dog. If you've ever had a dog in heat, okay.
Everybody, oh my god, I don't dog know where that was going, but
just saying, if you've ever had a dog in heat, multiply that by about 10,000 once a month.
It's horrible.
That's what once a month the town of Greeley smells.
People that live in northern Denver metro area.
And you can smell in the car.
If summer breeze comes in
bro.
And you go, the It smells like Greeley. There's a storm coming in.
We went and did a showing up in that area, actually South Greeley. And I got out of the car and we started walking. It was a new build neighborhood. We started walking to the house. I was like, how the hell are they selling
it? It smells like iron. It just smells like straight iron.
So you're like, it is a college town, but it's hyper local. The person that owned this house lives in Seattle. She wanted upper 400, lower 500 for this house. I pulled comps prior to knowing that. The comps that I, I'm pretty good at my comps.
275.
I'm pretty spot on. High to mid threes, high twos.
270, yeah.
But there was an addition. I said, okay, that might make the difference. Let's go walk the property.
Mm-hmm.
Walk low the property. Twos. I was like, good Lord. Maybe high threes, but you're shot in the dark. And then I set up some showings to see what was in the high threes, low fours, yeah, night and day. And I was like, she's not going to get that. So super hyper local, you have to be informed.
Yes. No, it is.
And I have a listing in Windsor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Windsor's not that far.
Nope.
You saw it. Mm-hmm. It needs a little bit of TLC. It's just, it's lived in.
It's funny because I even told you, and I was like, you can just tell they just didn't like do like monthly cleans.
Yeah,
that's it.
I mean, he's a hunter.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. he's a tradesman.
But he's not a father. Dirty.
It needs a little TLC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're at $499.
Beautiful.
Built 2019.
Mm-hmm.
4-bedroom, 4-bath, 3-car garage.
And that's a great price.
And Windsor it's a nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And Windsor and Loveland have turned so much. Loveland is a beautiful city now. It used to be, you know, our agricultural small town. It's nice now.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Windsor's right there too.
You sneeze on the way to Fort Collins.
You miss it. Absolutely. And now you got Buc-ee's up there, which is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the Centara area is great.
Yeah.
Like that whole.
Loveland's
awesome.
Know Fort Collins better than all three of us. So
he
knows Northern Colorado well. It's a nice area. So again, hyper.
Windsor's local. Great too. Windsor's fantastic.
Windsor's a beautiful place.
It is.
And then I went and toured a couple of Journey Homes and DR Hortons up in the West Greeley area too.
Yeah.
Nice place too. West Greeley is not Greeley.
And
it's kind of like they're trying to turn it into, and I hate to use this term, I really do, but we have a community here in Colorado, Highlands Ranch, and that was like our first super suburb, right? It still is one of the biggest.
You can just say they're trying to gentrify it, Oscar. It's okay.
It's the bubble.
Right. So they're trying to convert West Greeley into that and into Windsor and stuff like that. So it's a nice area, super hyper local. So again, goes back to education.
And my favorite thing too is like people don't understand that Colorado, like it's a third of the state where most of the residences are.
Mm-hmm. How far is my listing from LaSalle?
20 minutes.
Maybe. 20 minutes?
Yeah, 25
minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like that's what most people don't realize is Colorado is really not that developed west of Denver. Like Reunion's like our furthest
east. Oh, and we're in the prairie.
Yeah.
East Colorado is a freaking Bermuda Triangle.
It's a
prairie. Colorado.
Burlington and Kings.
It's a high plains.
Colorado is prairie. People think Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. No.
Hey, I sold a beautiful property out in Calhoun.
It's freaking prairie.
It is.
It's the void. East Colorado's the boy.
No, you've got the Front Range.
You got I-25 corridor and west. Mm-hmm. Yes, different environment, different climate. Mm-hmm. Then you get into the mountains.
Yep.
Totally different.
I'll tell you what. I've been spending a lot of time in Kiowa and Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah.
For me, that's like the movement where I think.
Oh, County? Albert County.
Not if the residents have anything
true.
To say about it.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a contractor and one of his biggest contractor partners. He lived out in Elizabeth. Way out since the 70s. His area, he owned, I think, 30-something acres, and he was moving out to Montana in the 90s because it was getting too...
too busy?
Too busy for him.
If you guys haven't... Please look up Kiowa, Colorado. When I tell you a one street... I'm saying like 7 buildings in this town.
in Albert County, because that's the county, you have Franktown's actually still Douglas, believe it or not, but it's right there. You have Elizabeth, you have Kiowa, and there is, what's the one that starts with an A? Agate.
Agate.
Mm-hmm. But Elizabeth.
Agate.
Agate.
Only because it's agave.
So I love agave. So Elizabeth is a one-road town, and that is their like hub. That's where you go for the courthouses and everything. But it's small. Before moving to Castle Rock, I was looking for acreage in Albert County.
The Independence neighborhood is pretty nice out there. Mm-hmm.
Sure, our lender lives.
Yep,
one of ours.
Yeah. And then you got big guys out there. You got LGI building. They've been building since the mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. Richmond's out there now.
Richmond's out there.
And yeah, Richmond, Lennar, all mm-hmm. of Meritage, all of them.
It's
there.
Huge.
But again, Northeast Colorado, Keensburg, mm-hmm. all those, they're getting developed now.
Yep.
And there's plenty of space out there. But again, back to
livability.
to Jameson's point, not if the locals have anything to do with mm-hmm. it, because you go out there, you're going to find a different human being.
Okay.
Out there.
So before we're back, we're talking, right? But I want to kind of guide a little bit. We said as a buyer what you should expect in a buyer's market, right? You're going to get higher concessions. There's better opportunities for you to negotiate and get more stuff in. But based on that article headline that you said, sellers beware, you're pulling off the market. If you are a seller in a quote unquote buyer's market, how do you capitalize? How do you feel comfortable going into this market?
You have to be prepared for two things. You need to be the best looking and best priced house in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I mean neighborhood. I don't mean area. I mean neighborhood.
Yep.
You have to be the best priced and best looking house in your neighborhood. And that could mean small updates, right? It doesn't have to be major, but it's got to be, your paint's got to look good. Your baseboards have to look good. Your floor's got to look good. Your exterior paint's got to look good. Your carpet's got to look clean. Like, those are the small, like the low price, high impact areas that when somebody walks in, you can't have them thinking, okay, this is going to be dollar signs.
Guys, please.
Okay.
Curb appeal is so huge.
Well, it is. And here's no idea. But this is what I'm saying. Like, when you look at comps, it is no longer a question. And obviously this depends on your financial scenario. So these are all the things that we walk through when we go through a pre-listing appointment, right? But for example, if you are selling your home to then buy something else, you have to understand that any financial loss you take on the sell side currently, you will gain on the buy side. So you have to be okay with that scenario, because if you want your property to sell in the current market with what it is, you've got to, I'm not saying undercut, but you have to stand out.
You have to be competitive.
And there's only two ways to stand out.
You have to
price or look and feel of the house. And most often right now with rates where they're at, it's going to be both. And I can tell you, and I can give you anecdotal advice or examples of somebody, I just saw it the other day in feedback, where they toured a house and the feedback was the guy that was chopping the house was like 6'8". And his feedback was that the vanities in the bathrooms were too short for somebody that's 6'8", so he didn't want to buy the house. It's little shit like
one
that.
Of my feedbacks on Buffalo Run, mm-hmm. brand new home, built in 2020. Great. That's where we did the video. Mm-hmm. Great home. It was a concern that the basement ceiling was too low.
Yep.
It's a basement ceiling.
4 years ago, Oscar, would you have gotten that feedback?
Absolutely not.
Right.
It's not even a thing. It's a standard basement height. And I emailed back. I said, is it a concern from a hazard standpoint? Because it's to spec. No, they just wanted high ceilings. Okay, correct. Don't say it's a concern.
Right.
They want higher ceilings in the basement.
But it doesn't matter because
how many basements have 20-foot ceilings?
The point is, as a seller, you can't take that personally, so you have to be okay with that. But
and two, that's where I was going. You have to remove the emotional part
correct.
As much as you can. It's always going to be emotional.
And you have
I don't
to,
care how if you you're a hard to, ass, it's going to be emotional. Remove yourself as much as possible.
And you have to be creative.
Because to segue or to add to your point, you have to have the prettiest house on the block and or the best price. Correct. If you don't have both or at least one, you're going to sit for a very long time. Now, real time. I have a consumer right now that the house was on the market. When I did the traditional way of doing our market analysis, didn't work. Mm-hmm. You have to do price point now. What's selling? And then go to apples to apples. So one, the big ticket items have to be good. The roof, exterior paint, HVAC system, mm-hmm. plumbing, electrical. They have to be on par or better. Now, if you don't do the roof, guess what? Non-insurable, not going to sell. The time that you got conventional and cash offers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Your buyer pool is going to shrink if you can't go FHA
yep.
and you can't go VA. You got to open it to everybody. Well, guess what? FHA and VA care about chip and paint on the exterior.
Yep.
Your exterior needs to be good. Mm-hmm. Roof, exterior has to be good. If you have an old HVAC system, no buyer is going to want to come in and possibly have a $10,000 to $20,000 price tag lingering over your head when this thing goes out. Mm-hmm. So the major components of your house have to be functional or newer to get some of the best offers.
And something that I want to give to buyers, please remember to play the game in a real estate transaction. What I mean by that is, in a market where you have the ability to ask for things, where you have concessions being where they are, when you go under contract, when you start making decisions on what you're going to do, remember that you have three options to pull out of your contract. You have three times in your contract to where you can say, hey, I'm not feeling this. Let me pull out.
Technically, you got like 10. But
technically, but I'm saying
the big ones are every time.
Big three. Yeah. So, and I say this because I had an experience where I had buyers that were looking and they were excited about buying. And then we got into the transaction. And before we even got to the inspection, they were like, you know what? We're going to pull out. This isn't the right time for us. It wasn't the first time home buyers, but they were not ready, quote unquote. But that's before we even got to the inspection. When I asked them what was going on, it was, oh, we're worried about heater. We're worried about furnace. We're worried about this. And I said, well, we haven't even done the inspection yet. We don't know what that looks like. And they've already committed to us for being okay in some level with concessions. So why not just try it? And that's, again, where the realtor comes into play. When you go through the inspection, those are your negotiating points, guys. And let's say you get through the inspection, things pop up, and you're like, that's too much. We don't want to deal with it. Cool. Pull out of the transaction. But give your realtor an opportunity to make the play, to talk to the listing agent, to talk to the sellers, and actually see if a deal can be worked out. Because right now is a great time for you to get into a home that you like while getting some things back from the listing and the seller.
So the major, like James said, there's a few things. And when you say get out of the transaction, pull out of the transaction without losing your earnest money.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So the major things are loan term. That means you go in, you apply for a loan, and the terms that you're getting are not up to par. You have a few days. It's short-lived, maybe 7 to 10. Then you have the loan approval. That's a little bit longer. You like the terms, and then you go through the process, and all of a sudden that approval is no longer valid, and you can't get that loan. That's loan approval. So you have 20 to 28 days for loan approval. If you can't, you lose your job or some, circumstantial stuff comes up, you pull out, get your earnest money back. Inspection's another one. And inspection's not because, the house is falling apart. It could be for any reason. Mm-hmm. Like, the plumbing, there's polybutylene, there's galvanized, there's PEX, and there's copper. Well, sometimes visual inspections, you can't tell. And then all of a sudden you have a plumbing issue that you don't want to deal with. You can pull out. Or it could be something simple. Then you got appraised value. If it doesn't appraise for what you thought it was or the purchase price, you go back in and negotiate. You can't come to any terms. You could pull out or, get your earnest money back. And then there's also HOA and title. Mm-hmm. Say you have a work truck and you have to bring it home every day. Well, the HOA doesn't allow for that. And you got to put magnets to hide your there's a lot of stuff.
And how would a buyer know about that, Oscar?
So there's you have a certain amount of time for the seller to get you HOA docs. You got to look at the minutes. There's the bylaws, there's the minutes, there's the budgets. You got to make sure that's all good. Your agent doesn't really have a responsibility to do it, but a good agent will look at it and say, hey, look, these are the red flags, but at least comb through it. I'll tell you right now, as an agent, as a consumer, when I bought my house, I thumbed through them. It's a lot. I get it. But there's some big stuff in there. If I had a concern going in that I did have a work truck or an RV or a boat that I was going to keep at my house, that's something I'm going to dig into the bylaws.
Sidebar pro tip. If you get it in a PDF version, use the find function. Type in exactly what you want.
Use the search.
Yeah. Hit search. It'll pull it up for you.
I think I do that with the FHA handbook now. Yeah. It's just old habits from mm-hmm. from being a lender in the past.
I think the takeaway for me, like from a seller standpoint, is right now you have to look at your house as a product you are trying to sell to a consumer. And if you look at it in that light, you have to look at it in conjunction with your realtor and potentially lender. I'll get to that in a minute. How do you creatively market that product?
I mean,
to differentiate from another product. For example, if you've got in a same neighborhood two identical ranch homes, 3-bed, 2-bath, 1,700 square feet, both standard backyards, standard finishes, builder quality, and they're both marketed at $520,000, right? Same interest rate, buyers walk through, they're the same fucking house. How do you differentiate between the two? Right? Mm-hmm. One strategy is, well, I'm going to blast flyers, I'm going to do video, I'm going to do this, blah, 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 and that's, they're going to both do the exact same thing. Okay. It's going to reach the same people. Okay. That doesn't solve the pain point of the buyer, which is the affordability piece. Mm-hmm. So if I've got those same two houses, but I've got one agent that goes to their lender, says, hey, I want to work with you. Would you be willing to, if a buyer uses you as the lender on this purchase, provide a free 1.0 rate buy down? So would you buy down the rate for this buyer for the first year to make their monthly payment cheaper for 12 months? Would you be willing to do that? Yes. So now if that same buyer walks through both houses, which one's more appealing? Mm-hmm. Obviously that one. Similar with a condo, right? So let's say you got two condos, same thing. But with condos and townhomes, we know right now, HOAs are a fucking bitch.
Not only that, the insurance.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm just
wind
just,
and hail. I mean, that's
doesn't matter. I'm just talking HOAs, right? So now you go, okay, what's the pain point? The pain point's affordability. Affordability is monthly payment. What affects the monthly payment on a condo or a townhome? It's the HOA. How do I fix that? Well, if I'm the seller, and I had this conversation with a client last week, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go on market, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to offer concessions, but we're going to frame it as saying, hey, we're going to pay for a HOA. Full year of the first HOA when you move in. What is that? In this case, it was a $400 a month HOA. It's $4,800. In the grand scheme of things, is it a drop in the bucket? Yeah, it's a $4,800 concession offered up front. But instead of just saying, we're going to offer you $4,800, we are giving the buyer the exact reason why we're offering it and what it can actually go to that solves a pain point. And to me, that's the difference right now with sellers is they have to look at it from a marketing, a product standpoint and solving a pain point for a buyer. Mm-hmm. And the sellers that do that are going to have more success at selling their properties quicker than the ones that don't.
I'm going to take it a step further. I have three properties right now that have assumable loans. If your agent doesn't talk to you about what that looks like, you know, call me. So there's a lot of people that own houses that took advantage of the low rates. Three of my houses have a 3% interest rate. That could be assumed by a potential buyer. The biggest hurdle on that is that you have to come in with a gap. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? I got an email the other day. There is a lender that would loan you the gap money, a second on it. That wasn't a thing. I called them up. I got some stuff. I can now finance the gap. So a quick run
through.
That's
huge.
If you have a house and you owe $300,000, you're trying to sell it for $450,000. Because that's what it's going to appraise at. So you can assume the $300,000 loan at 3%, and the gap, well, most gaps are anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000. So if you don't have $100,000 to bridge the gap, because that's what you have to do, there is now a lender that will bridge that gap, and you only come in with as little as 5%.
That's awesome.
5% down, you get a 3% interest rate on the majority of the loan, and then the second, I'm assuming it's somewhere around 7%. Your blended rate is still at 4%.
I mean, and what's awesome to me about that is we're seeing the industry adapt in real time.
Kind of.
That's what's scary is that you have a lot of people adapting and re-terraforming our industry, like subject twos, which is that's a big no-no, but a big makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I am impartial. I don't know enough to say it's a good or a bad thing, but I've seen a lot of subject twos come across my desk.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, from a seller standpoint in this market, you have to be creative. You have to look at it from a product being sold to a consumer, be creative. From a buyer standpoint, because as we go back to the beginning of the conversation, everything is so sensitive. I think the mistake that a lot of buyers are making is they're doing the whole, I'm going to wait because I'm going to wait for the next headline. I'm going to wait for the next this, that, and the other. But they don't have their ducks in a row beforehand. Mm-hmm. So then by the time they do act, that house that has been sitting for 75, 85, 95 days, by the time the rates do drop to 6.2 and they're like, yep, I'm ready to go, now the house is gone. So if we just want to flip to the buyer side real quick, this is what I'll say on the buy side. Yes, it's a buyer's market, but get your ducks in a row. Understand with your realtor what you're looking for, the specific neighborhoods, the amenities, the criteria, understand with your lender what your like go number is. Like if rates hit this and you can get my monthly to this, I want to go and I want to know beforehand. And then understand what you're looking for headline wise, because yeah, the Fed rate cut is the big headline. But realistically, as Oscar pointed out, the numbers move before that, whether it's the job report, the CPI report, anything else, pay attention to those things and say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger beforehand because those things got priced in.
Get educated,
yourself through your lender, through your realtor that way, so that you have all of your documentation, all of your W-2s, everything ready to go. I tell my clients, and this is going to, if you're non-gun supporters, you're going to get pissed off, but have a bullet in the chamber, right?
Jesus.
And be ready to pull the trigger.
Hey, we can't get kicked out of this place, so we're good.
Too many people are approaching it without a loaded gun. And then all of a sudden, somebody breaks in and the opportunity comes in. They're like, why didn't I get... No, have the bullet in the chamber so that when you're ready to make a move, everything's already set and you can still get those concessions. You can still get those discounts because you were ready to make a move beforehand as a buyer and you can just take further advantage of the situation.
Jameson, what is the highest concession you've gotten on a consumer?
On a consumer? Yep. Like ever?
Ever.
$47,000.
$47,000. How'd you structure that?
What do you mean? Like, what did it go towards?
Where did it go towards?
That one went to a full 2-year rate, temporary buy down and then closing costs.
So let's take the temporary buy down. It's uh-huh. just a buy down of the rate.
Correct.
Right. So, there's 3-to-1, 2-1, and all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, it was I want to say the purchase price is 1.4. The loan was just under, I want to say, 900,000. So year one, they saved almost 1,200 a month. Year two, they saved like 875 a month, somewhere around there. And then we covered about $10,000-$12,000 in closing costs.
Okay. So
all they did was they came out of pocket with down payment and that was it.
So closing costs consist of your escrows, you know, anything that has to do through the loan.
Yeah.
Let's call it about
origination fees, escrows.
Sometimes origination fees,
sometimes,
right?
Yeah.
So let's call it anywhere from, depending on the size of the loan, let's give it a round number, 10 grand. It'll cover
I think it was 12. I think it was 12 for the closing costs and then like 30,000 for the buy down.
And
so it was like 42 total.
Going
like that.
To.
Or 35 for the buy down.
So right now, real time and subjective, right? It's all case by case. But I'm going to see what an access. So you got $43,000. So
45.
Let's say 30K
mm-hmm.
went to a possible buy down.
Roughly. Yep.
So if a rate is at, let's say let's call it a 6% right now.
Mm-hmm.
If a rate's 6%, if you have $30,000 to buy down the rate, you are looking at, good Lord. You could buy it down to a 4.75%.
Mm-hmm.
And still have some left.
Permanent
over.
Or temporary?
Permanent.
Right.
Incredible.
Permanent. Mm-hmm. There's ways to do it. Mm-hmm. Educate yourself, get yourself a good lender and real estate yep. agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think when I bought that one down, it was, I think rates were at about 6.9, 6.8, 6.8-ish. So we brought it down to a 4.8, then a 5.8, and then a 6.8.
Don't beat period. The seller up on price. So, tell them, you know what? I'm not going to beat you up on price. If it appraises, we're good. Give me $40,000.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. Right. Price drop versus concessions. But
get a concession.
Yes.
And I'd rather take a 5% interest rate.
It's called strategery.
Yes. And this comes back to full circle. What are you looking for? If you want your payment to be X amount,
mm-hmm.
let's look for it. There is a way to get it there. I don't care what the rates are doing.
Yep.
I honestly think that's the
with
best.
With a smart real estate agent and a lender that's willing to get creative, you can make anything happen.
And that's what I mean. I think that's the best way. Like if a buyer were to come to me and say, hey, I'm looking at buying a house, where should I start?
Yeah.
What I would say is, give me your monthly budget. What can you manage monthly? And once I know that, I can do all the work on the back end to get you to that monthly or as close to that monthly as possible.
Correct.
And I think but again, it comes down to the realtor that you're using. And I think that moving forward, we're going to see the realtors that have those connections, that have those networks, that have the knowledge to do those things. Those are the ones that are going to not only stay in the market, but are going to succeed for their buyers and sellers.
Whether it's a reduction in purchase price or a concession, who cares if you have a 6.5? If your monthly payment is within budget, mm-hmm. roll with it. You could always refinance.
Exactly.
Don't get hyper-focused on the rate. Mm-hmm. Because whether we take a price drop and they say, okay, we'll get you a 5%, but we're going to sell it to you at 460.
Right.
Or you're like, you know what? we could get this house at 400. They're not going to take, you know, give you all these concessions, but mm-hmm. we could sell it at 400. Your payment's going to be the same. Don't be hyper-focused on one thing. Let's strategically get to what your end goal is, and it's a win for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to negotiate exactly. and get creative. And creative doesn't mean getting illegal or anything crazy.
No.
It's just structuring your money right.
Doing it right. All right. Was there anything else you guys wanted to cover before we move on to our One Rock takeaways?
I don't think no. so.
Already?
Yeah. Already? Jeez. Yeah. I think, honestly, obviously, guys, we know, you know.
I do have to take.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you wanted to play this in, but the second part, what have I taken over? I'm actually a supervisory agent on Fridays for a big group of agents. There's seven of us that do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to try to incorporate what real-time realtors are going, like what's their I don't want to say
headaches. Maybe we can do like an Oscar's Corner.
Maybe.
Where I could set up a video and then you could just like record and talk,
you know,
about
what's real questions. Time, what's the heartaches that we're yeah, going through.
100%. And guys, one thing that we want to do before we move on to the One Rock takeaway, I want to let you guys know, with the podcast, we understand. We talk about real estate, but a lot of you guys are more interested in the bourbon than the real estate information. And then also, real estate in general is kind of boring. We know that. But we're here to give you the information and arm you with that information. But what we're going to start doing is start doing more of the stuff like we did with the cigar company, the coffee company. We want to bring you more value. How can you add value to your home? How can you add value to your living
experience?
Real estate's
boring until
home?
It makes you a millionaire. I'm just going to
well,
throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. But just saying. I'm sorry. Let's be honest about it. Very rarely, before I got into real estate, would I sit and listen to an hour-long podcast on real estate because I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Let me just I'm just going to rebuttal this real quick. Charlie told me before this podcast even aired that he had his most successful month he's ever had as far as money made last month. This is before real estate transaction. He's made more money in 1 month than he ever has.
Mm-hmm.
And the industry that he made that money in was because of what?
Videography.
And how'd you get into that?
Real estate.
Okay.
But ultimately, guys, we want to make it a little bit more fun for you. We want to bring a little bit more information that's adjacent to real estate. How can you make a coffee station in the house? How can you
build a cigar bar in your house that you bought because you're interested in real estate?
How can you create a golf sanctuary?
You guys can't tell.
I can't believe you're not even going to touch the golf, Mr. I golf 20 times a week.
You don't even get me started. I get real estate's boring, but at the same time, I saw this great quote where it was like, if you don't take a percentage of your just normal paycheck and put it aside to invest in something like real estate, you will work a 9-to-5 until the day you die.
Oh, I agree. I 100%
and
agree.
I get it's boring, but here's the thing. The boring shit is what makes people
100%
have financial freedom yes. to then do the not
fun
boring
stuff.
Shit.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I agree with that. I'm just saying, entertainment-wise.
We can be fucking entertaining, right?
I mean, we can. Give us some ideas. I mean, I'm all for entertainment. I'm right. Mr. Entertainment, right. But
let's go ahead and move into our One Rock takeaways for today's episode. Since we've been away for a while, our One Rock takeaways are basically, we try to keep it a 1-to-2-sentence kind of finishing point for the episode's final thought from each one of us. So who wants to take the first One Rock takeaway back?
I'll do it. I'll start. Okay. I think that the market is absolutely insane right now. And I think the dichotomy that we're dealing with is everybody thinks and assumes it's a buyer's market, which means it's just easy to be a buyer and it's hard to be a seller. And I think that's the wrong mentality to have. I think that being strategic on both sides will make winners out of both sellers and buyers. Like, just because it's a buyer's market, we still have home prices, especially in Colorado, outpacing wage growth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not technically, yeah, it's a buyer's market. Like, you have negotiating power, but affordability is still outpacing inflation.
Yep.
Or sorry, it's still outpacing wage growth. So it's not like it's getting more affordable. So yeah, it's a buyer's market. Like, you have a chance. And I will tell you that this is the first time in probably 8 years that you have an opportunity to actually have power and control over your offer and what you get, but be strategic. And as a seller, the more strategic you are and the less emotional you are about your decisions and what you do during a transaction, the better off you're going
to
be.
I'm going to add to that. The emotional standpoint is where it's going to put a big dent in your game plan. Remove yourself from the situation as much as possible. The less emotional you could be of your current property, which is hard because that's where you raised your kids or your first house, whatever the case may be. Make it less emotional and make it more business, and you'll come out on top as a seller. And when you talk about affordability, there's no one to blame but ourselves. We're the ones that create the market. What does affordability mean? Okay, are you as a seller going to take a $100,000 hit to make it affordable for the rest of us? No, you're not. We're talking about our own equity, our own purchases. We're not. There's not a big conglomerate that owns all these houses. We own them.
BlackRock.
So be careful when you talk about affordability, because that's your pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Instead, look at your game plan. What's your end game? You're moving because you're downsizing. You're moving because you need more room. Let that be your primary focus, and remove yourself from the emotional part of your current home and get strategic on how you can either invest a little bit more to get a gain or drop the price for time-wise to get into the market now before that your next house goes up. I think those are the conversations you have to have. The emotional part, it's not going to go away. It's not easy to overlook, but the more you can remove yourself from the emotional part of the real estate, the better off you're going to be in this market.
And I'm gonna go ahead and tie it all together between the two of you guys. If you're on the buyer side, be prepared. If you're on the seller side, be prepared. And what I mean by that is, as a buyer, know what you want in your home, know your monthly costs and what you're willing to pay for that home. And if you're on the seller side, really, like Oscar said, be truthful with yourself as to what you want to sell your home for and what you're willing to take for your home. And then also what you're willing to spend to make your home marketable. If you do that on the buy side and the sell side, I think you're going to be great. But it also comes down to the agents that you're working with and their understanding of how to market a home and then how to negotiate for you on the buyer side.
Can I just a very small follow-up on what you just said?
Yeah.
I think this is going to be my new tagline.
Okay.
Hire the considerate asshole.
Yeah.
Because quick anecdotal story. I just gained a client because they had interviewed with another agent, and that agent was very pushy, very salesy, very, I need the sale. But then as soon as the client started pushing back, shut up, Siri, I wasn't talking to you, started pushing back, that client turned into a yes man. And it was like, well, I don't want to do this. Oh, no, absolutely. I think you're right. Well, wait a second. What you just told me, like, I'm a dick when it comes to, like, your property.
If
you
business were to ask me, business.
I'm considerate in the sense of, like, my job is to take in your goals, your financial situation, what you were trying to accomplish, but then give you a realistic idea of how we can actually make that happen. And I can sometimes come off as very blunt
mm-hmm.
in, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat, like, oh, yeah, we can totally just make this. No, if we need to do some work, we're going to do some work. If not, hire the considerate asshole, because you want that person not only helping you get to that goal, you also want that person negotiating for you.
You want them to be straight up and realistic.
You do.
Yeah,
100%. And too many people will try and just be the yes man or yes woman to just get the business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just right now, you can't afford to do
no,
that.
No,
you just can't.
Especially not as a seller.
You can't.
All right. And on that note, on our first week back, it is time for the bourbon
time
review.
Buffer when we need him.
Yep. It is time
is
for
it,
the
is
bourbon
it Michael
review.
Buffer or Bruce? No.
No, it's Bruce. Michael's Bruce. His brother.
Michael, it's Michael is
his brother.
Yes, but what was his tagline?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know what he does. I just know Bruce.
Michael Buffer was the boxing announcer.
Right. Bruce is it's time for the UFC.
And Michael Buffer is
which, let's get way, ready to rumble.
Paid? Is that
Michael Buffer got paid $100,000 every time he said his thing.
Oh wow.
That's yeah, crazy. Bruce Buffer is $500,000 every UFC event.
That's awesome. Well, on to the bourbon review for today's episode. And for those of you who stuck around or just skipped to the end of the video.
I got it. Time out. Let's get ready to rumble.
That's
Michael
said.
Buffer.
Okay. That's what he just said. Okay. Welcome to the conversation.
I got mics, boom mics and stuff in front of me. I'm a visual guy. I don't know what he
I
says.
I love it.
I kind of block everybody else that I can't see out.
He's got the hater blockers on.
No, they're called Peaky Blinders.
On today's episode, guys, we're sipping on Old Elk Infinity Blend. It's a blend of two high wheats and then their...
Two high wheats and a malt.
Two high wheats and a high malt bourbon. You guys tell me.
I don't know.
Just got brighter in here. The lights came back on.
I'll be honest with you.
I let it sit for like the first 10 minutes. I didn't take a sip. And then I picked it up again. And I got smacked with chocolate.
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. Incredible change from the spice forward.
Yeah, I think the alcohol burned off.
Mm-hmm.
And it went very sweet forward.
It made it very crisp and clean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The alcohol did burn out, and it just brought forward a very drinkable bourbon.
Yeah. I think this is a this is going to be one people are going to love it or hate it depending on their palate.
Yeah, 100%.
I think they're going to hate it at the beginning, but if you let it open out, give it a chance.
Well, and I think we have a great, you know, kind of
dichotomy or
here, yeah, yeah. Like
you know
great,
what?
A great flow.
Can you spell dichotomy?
D-I-C-H-O-M-A-T. Wait, dichotomy.
D-I-C-H-O-T-O-M-Y.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we have a good dichotomy range here because I tend to sit more on the sweet. Oscar, you're more traditional bourbon. You want the burn. You want that oak, not as sweet. And Jameson's a beautiful middle ground.
I don't know what I am.
He just called you middle ground.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like. I
Jameson is beautiful.
He's beautiful.
What is this?
So are you, Oscar?
It just depends on the bourbon, honestly. Yeah. I am. You know what I decided? Actually, uh-huh. I figured this out. I think after what is this episode 92?
92 or 3?
Yeah. I am a vibe based bourbon guy. I really am.
Except for the brown bag bourbon.
The brown bag was. It was supposed to be a gag,
no,
and it became
there is
a
no
thing.
Vibe for that.
Yeah, no,
there's a vibe.
It's angry, called depressed.
No, there is a vibe for that. It's called Skid Row.
Yeah, yes,
100%.
That's what the vibe is.
If I'm going to jail the next day,
you're going to jail the next day if you drink this.
Yeah. Well, and it's crazy because on this, like, I feel like the nose didn't change as much. The spice definitely died down.
No, the nose changed in the fact that there is no burn at all in the nostrils.
Correct. Yes, because the ethanol's gone.
Yeah, and I think we definitely need to get Glencairn's only because I think why this burned off as much. Yeah.
Listen, guys, HomeGoods only had
many. We'll get there.
My other option was champagne flute stuff. That was going to be real fucking weird.
I mean, it was either this,
ooh,
yeah,
red Solo cups, or champagne flutes.
Right.
I'm going to... JC's glass even looks, and if you guys don't remember, the glass that sits in the center of the table is for our buddy JC. He basically brought all of us together and made this possible. And this is his bottle or his glass that sits in the middle of the table as a homage to him. And it also sits as our control. It sits open. Nobody sips it. I want to test this one because even the color looks different between my glass and JC's glass.
So before you taste that, though, I just want to ask. Because the first couple sips, I had the burn and the spice on the front end, right on the tongue.
Uh-huh.
Now that's gone. Like there's no spice on the front.
There's still a burn in his glass.
Yeah. See,
that's wild. I'm gonna sip it. Hold on. That's fucking nuts. That is totally different.
Jesus.
Here. That was... Yeah. Seriously, that is a completely different sip. And it's been sitting open the whole time.
Is it because it's JC's glass? Is he here with us?
Maybe. Just he had his hand over it, capping it off so it didn't aerate.
Hold on. It does have
right?
a burn. I went in for the...
How is that possible?
It singed the nostrils, man.
That's what I'm saying.
Jorge!
But
it's totally different.
It did open up, though.
It opened, but it still has that
spice forward. Instead of mine, is just straight chocolate sweet.
But why? Is it because it's
the
angled,
glass?
So it just...
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't get it. Maybe because we're swirling it or something.
Yeah,
because
it's like right on the nostril.
Yeah,
you know,
right there. And then now,
but it's been open for the exact
the traditional way of saying it. We're chewing the fat. All right, we're using terms of real estate. I mean, bourbon. Yeah, it singed the nostrils. That was weird.
Isn't that crazy? It's still the same.
It's kind of weird.
It's very weird.
This is a different bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
You go like this. I don't want to say it's watered down taste-wise, but smell-wise, it is.
That's wild.
Fuck these glasses.
Different levels of infinity.
Back to Home Goods.
The glass that you drink your wine out of makes a difference. The glass you drink your bourbon
dude,
out of
crazy.
Makes a difference.
That's insane.
That is the most stark difference.
It holds the true character of the bourbon.
So I'm just then let's just take an aside real quick. As you guys are watching or listening, it absolutely matters the type of glass because we've all only had one pour. And we've had the same pour since we've had it open about an hour, right? And the difference in not only the nose, but the palate between a standard rocks glass and that, and it's not even a true Glencairn.
No, it's kind of fluted at the bottom.
It's kind of like a snifter.
It's a snifter, if anything. But the character on the nose, the burn is there. It's not there on the standard rocks. The flavor is
intensified
on that. This makes it taste watered down.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. That's absolutely incredible.
Like, it's almost for me, right? Now I'm tasting JC's glass. Before I write anything down.
Two different bourbons.
That's a 3-point swing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It's two different bourbons. Right?
Absolutely. So now,
just so you guys know, like, we're not fucking around. Like,
no.
That makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Now we need to get the Glencairns.
100%. I'm going to go order some.
We'll order them. But all right, let's go ahead. And guys, I know we've been away for a while.
I got to go off of that then. I can't go off of.
Yeah. So let's go. I'm going to go off of both of them because I think that gives it more credibility after the sip.
Agreed. 100%.
So what we do is we do our rock
trash out of these.
Well, again, rocks glass. Mm-hmm. What do you do with it? You put rocks in it because you want to open it to the max.
Yeah.
Glencairn, you don't really put a rock in there. It's mm-hmm. neat.
So, as you guys know, we do our rock rating, and our rock rating is on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the best, 10 being the worst, because the more rocks you put in a bourbon, technically, the worse it is, because you want to water it down, open it up, it's too hot for you.
You know what this tastes like? Plaster. Uh-huh. Like, towards the end after drinking that?
It's weird.
Kind of jacked it all up. All
right, so the highest rating that we've ever had on a bourbon on this show was 1.8.
That was 1.5.
It was 1.5.
We went down to 1.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Dexter was 1.8, but then we had Elijah Craig Private Barrel Select, Old Soul, and
there's one other one.
One of the Heaven Hills.
Yeah, one of the Heaven Hills.
It was up there.
So we found that unicorn.
I'm gonna put it on fucking camera and I'm gonna hold you guys to this. I don't care if I buy a fucking chalkboard. We're saving it up. We are actually going to record.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, like, what's that car show?
Yes. Top Gear.
Okay. Top Gear. Yes.
We will fucking record it. I promise you guys.
We'll get a whiteboard.
This is new beginning, new us.
Yeah.
We are going to get a whiteboard. We will absolutely record what it is so you guys can go back.
Like the top bourbon and then it'll drop and go up.
Yes. We're going to do it. Yeah. Oh, I want to do it the entire fucking time we've done this podcast. We're going to do it.
I love it. All right. So what are you guys thinking for the rock rating on this guy?
It's complicated.
It is complicated. I had a rating, then I have another rating, mm-hmm. and then the original rating. I'm just go middle of the road with my rating. I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay. I forgot my iPad.
I forgot that's what we're doing at 2.5. Okay.
2.5.
I'm going on that.
That's what I'm saying. I went from original to this. To back to that, it's like, all right,
the blend is a 3. But I'm going to give you my rationale, right? Because I don't, like, in that glass, it did not hold its character like I thought mm-hmm. it would. But in that glass, it absolutely held its character like I thought it would. And it actually got a little bit better because mm-hmm. the burn was still there, but the sweetness remained. So neither one canceled each other out. And we've said it forever. If you can keep a bourbon open and the complexity stays,
it's a good bourbon.
Especially with a high proof bourbon, especially with one that is as sweet as this,
mm-hmm.
I'm cool with 2.5.
So the glass carried the bourbon's true flavors.
Yeah,
would you say that's mm-hmm. kind
agreed?
Of happened?
But I mean,
it removed the harshness.
Mm-hmm.
So flavor wise, it was smoother.
Yeah,
but it kept the harshness in the nose
and
the burn enough to be a flavor profile.
Yep,
no burn and just like kind of flat. It's mm-hmm. like drinking a Coca-Cola. You crack it open. Oh, the fizz, the burn.
The bubbles are hitting you in the face.
And then you leave it open and it becomes flat. It's a different mm-hmm. soda.
Yeah.
I think a fountain Coke from McDonald's, right?
Yep.
Versus
a bottle Coke.
And here's, I think,
versus a Mexican Coke.
Oh.
There you go, yeah.
Mm, real cane sugar?
Yeah.
I mean.
Buddy.
I think for me, I want to go like a 2.65, 2.7.
Yeah, see?
Because for me, I think, I mean, you said it at the beginning, if you're a new bourbon drinker, this could be a way to dip your toe into those higher proofs mm-hmm. and still get...
Let it open up.
Yeah, yeah. Let it open up.
I would not be afraid to give this to somebody that's new to bourbon
mm-hmm.
and to go, oh my God, dude, 55%.
Like, yeah.
But try it.
Yeah. Well, let and it not open only up. That, I would say too, like, hey, I'm giving you this bourbon because it is on the higher proof,
yeah.
but the flavors are incredible. And if you sit with a group of people and you talk and you're having a good time, I know that it will be just as good towards the end
yep.
as it was. And I'll be honest with you, like you said... Campfire bourbon, I'm not going to have a Glencairn with you. I'm not going to have a rocks glass. I'm probably going to have a collapsible plastic.
And that's why I gave it the 3.
Yes.
Because I am the kind of person that you have a Glencairn, sweet, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
You got a Red Solo cup, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I'll drink my bourbon out of any vessel you give me.
Nope.
A good bourbon will hold it.
I am a vessel.
Just pour it straight into my mouth. No, but I'm saying a good bourbon will hold its ground. This is a good bourbon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the characteristics remain better in the correct vessel.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
I will give this to someone that's a beginner bourbon. Let it open up. You're going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'll give it to an experienced bourbon and say, hey, you know what? You might want to drink it out of Glencairn if you want the notes to stay.
Well, agreed. And the thing that I across the board, the most about our journey, doing the bourbon, the podcast, everything, as we're coming back to it, is I've had multiple times where, you know, my friends from high school, we all, you know, we were, oh, let's drink bourbon, smoke cigars, yeah. You know, like that's what we do.
What year did you graduate high school?
2011.
All right.
But I've had them, and I brought them Old Soul. I brought them.
I just bring that up because this guy's birthday is coming up.
He's going to talk about it.
And he's going to start feeling
it. It's just
it.
Like whenever I share them, I'm share with them.
Somebody's not coming to my birthday.
Hey, man. whenever high school was 2011. Whenever we talk about like the experience of drinking bourbon, we talk about this all the time, campfire bourbon, or
yep.
This is one where I'll drink with my friends. Every single time, it's been an amazing experience and an yep. awesome experience to say, hey, guys, I tried this. I really liked it. I want to share it with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether that's with a cigar, whether that's in the house or in the mountains, wherever it is, bourbon creates an experience and a memory when you share it like that. And I think this bottle is the epitome of that.
Yes. I get excited when I find a bourbon like this and I'm mm-hmm. like, you know what? Would I bring this over to Oscar's house? If like he had never tried it before,
yeah.
knowing that he's a bourbon drinker, at least enjoys bourbon, mm-hmm. or you, right?
Whoa, I am a...
No, if I didn't know, like if I didn't know you, right? But I knew like offhand, like I have a client of mine, right? Just found out his favorite bourbon is Jefferson Ocean Agency, mm-hmm. which is like, all right, I give it to you. It's an $80 cool. bottle. It's cool. It's cute. It's adorable.
Which Jeff, one?
Love you. But
the one that they do in the wine cask in the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, the Jefferson.
Well, ships.
Yeah, the Jefferson.
The ships. But ships, anyway, sorry. He goes, yeah, dude, I got this, whatever, right? And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know you were a bourbon guy, right? But now that I do, the next time I go to his house or if it was a closing gift, I would be excited to give him this bottle because mm-hmm. I'd be like, you know what, dude? Yeah, I know you like Jefferson Ocean. You're going to really fucking like this. And then you're going to take this bottle and you're going to give it to your buddies and go, my realtor in this case, or my friend, whatever, gave me this bottle and he's going to be excited to share it. So yep. I totally understand.
Exactly. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode. We are extremely grateful and happy to be back. Please leave us a comment. Let us know what you want us to talk about, what you don't want us to talk about, what kind of guests you want to see, what kind of information, what kind of bourbon. Again, if you have a family member, a friend that started a bourbon company, or you have one that you like that you want us to review and try, let us know. We will try our best to acquire it. But
this
with that
is,
being said...
This is a bourbon podcast,
yeah.
And we are... Our love for bourbon... Obviously, this is a real estate podcast as well, but... our affinity to bourbon is real.
Yeah,
I mean, 100%. I think when the guys came from
Balcones,
mm-hmm. we kind of
we learned it.
That sealed it for us.
100%.
Bourbon isn't just something that we're drinking to get drunk. I mean, you crack open a beer. It's either gonna be a special time or it's gonna be a part time, whatever. You crack open a bourbon. The guy from Nice said it best: the bottle stays open until one or two things happen: the drinking's done, or the bourbon's done. It's a process. It's time we spend together, and I cherish all of them.
Yep.
This podcast is fast, but because it talks about a few things that are near and dear to my heart, my time spent mm-hmm. with you guys and the bourbons, it's
awesome to be back.
It's almost
I'm excited
religion.
For this next chapter.
It's almost like a religion.
I will say this, and it just reminded me because we've had almost it's been 3 months off,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, if not more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like basically all summer.
Yeah.
And it solidified that. You, as an individual, you want to work with somebody, people, and you want to surround yourself with people that have a passion. And just listening to us talk about real estate and bourbon today, just the two things, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys can feel it. I can feel it here just in this office. Like these guys have a passion mm-hmm. for real estate and obviously bourbon. And it comes through because of the topics we talk about. Like, it's not like ho-hum, here's where interest rates are. Like, there's anger, there's energy.
Frustration.
You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, so it's cool because we get to express that to you guys watching and listening, hopefully. And I think it's a cool thing that I'm excited to bring it to you guys in a new environment with these two gentlemen. So it's just, I'm excited to have that passion, to bring
awesome.
It back and see where it leads. Hopefully you guys see it And yeah, I mean, I'm fantastic. I'm pumped to be back, man.
Yeah. And on that note, guys, you can reach out to all of us individually at our own socials. Oscar?
OscarTheRealtor.com, OscarTheRealtor.co.
Jamo?
The Colorado Real Estate Guy, and Jameson Amoros on all the other social medias.
Hey, Oscar Ibarra, my, my private, my
And I guess the Mile High Perspective on Instagram as well. That's our Instagram channel.
Mm-hmm. You can find me at Charlie Sardelli, or if you want to do a podcast yourself, you need any help with real estate media, let me know. BTG Productions, COLLC, or Charlie Sardelli, across the board. More than happy to answer any questions. But again, like Jameson said, you can reach us, the Mile High Perspective, all three of us, at any time, RESOTR at themilehighperspective.com, or give us a phone call.
720-584-3361.
And on that note, first episode back.
Hey.
It's done, baby.
Cheers, cheers, boys.
Good to see you guys again.
Good time. Yeah, you're going to have to be the...
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And for our video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective.